This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We want to have a little more fun before the summer is over, so on this Labor Day edition, we present an interview with and performance by Dion. He has a new CD called New Masters, featuring new versions of his old songs, as well as a few new songs and covers. If you've ever dismissed Dion as a former teen idol whose talent or relevance didn't survive the oldies era, what you hear today is likely to change your mind. He's a great singer, deeply influenced by the blues and country music. In 2000, after the release of his CD, Deja Nu, Dion brought his guitar to our studio and performed some of his own songs and some of the songs that influenced him. Dion had his first hit, I Wonder Why, in 1958 with the doo-wop group The Belmonts, named after Belmont Avenue and the Bronx neighborhood they lived in. His other hits included Where or When, Donna the Prima Donna, Runaround Sue, The Wanderer, and Abraham Martin and John. Let's hear his 1959 hit, Teenager in Love, back-to-back with the version of it from his new CD, New Masters.
Each time we have a quarrel, it almost breaks my heart, 'cause I'm so afraid that we will have to part. Tonight I ask the stars up above, why must I be a teenager in love? One day I feel so happy, the next day I feel so sad. I guess I'll learn to take the good with the bad, 'cause each night I must I be a teenager in love? I cried a tear for nobody but you. I'll be a lonely one if you should say we're through.
Well, if you want to make me cry, that won't be so hard to do. And if you should say goodbye, I'll go on loving you. Why must I be a teenager in love? I cried a tear for nobody but you. I'll be a lonely one if you should say we're through. Well, if you want to make me cry, that won't be so hard to do. And if you should say goodbye, I'll still go on loving. Each night I ask the stars up above, why must I be a teenager in love? Why must I be a teenager in love? Why must I be a teenager in love?
Dion is not a teenager anymore, but his fans still want to hear him sing his hits. I asked him if it's been difficult to find adult songs that reach his audience.
Well, I don't know. Songs to me have always been kind of like a diary. You know, say when I did Teenager in Love, maybe I was 16. Those questions in that song, even though it's a very simple song, and it seems like kind of claptrap or something, but it's not. To the unknowing ear, it would seem, you know, if you just listen to the surface of it, but it had a lot of heart, it had a lot of soul, and it asks some relevant questions that you could ask today. You know, and songs like I Wonder Why, it was the first hit record I had. You know, we didn't know how to write lyrics too good, but so we invented this kind of percussive rhythmic sound. You know, we'd make up these sounds. We'd go down to the Apollo Theater and hear the horn players, and we'd come back to the neighborhood and give the vocal group, I'd recruit guys and say, do this, do that, you know, and I'd try to get them to sound like the horn section down at the Apollo Theater. Like a song like Ruby Baby, I would, you know, I love a girl in a ruby, yes, her name. I have to go, Ruby, Ruby, Ruby Baby. It was like, they were like horns, you know. And all that stuff was arranged, you know, the group was a poor man's horn section on the street corners. That's what it was. Even when I did Run Around Sue, and they would hit, hit, dun da 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 hit, hit, dun da 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 hit, hit. That was a horn section that I heard at the Apollo Theater. I just brought it back to the streets and gave it to the guys to sing.
Let me go back to the beginning with you, when you were first listening to music. You wrote in your autobiography that Hank Williams really influenced you early on. When you were a kid, growing up in the Bronx, what did you hear in Hank Williams?
Well, Hank Williams seemed like so total to me, so committed to the lyric. He would actually rip the ends of the words off at the, you know, the end of the sentence. It sounded like he'd bite into the word and rip it off. You know, he would do like, well, I can't sing like him, but the kind of idea, like the first song I heard him do was like, yeah, and I left my home down on the rural route. Told my pa I was gonna step in down and get the honky-tonk blues. Yeah, the honky-tonk blues. Well, Lord, I got the honky-tonk blues. You know, he said, I'd stomp into every place in town. And he'd rip the word right off like, I got it. And there it goes, you know. And he was totally committed, physically, lyrically, musically, spiritually. I just said, what's this guy talking about? You know, just. And see, I had a guy on the streets that really helped me out a lot too. There was a guy in Bronx, New York City. His name was Willie Green, and he was the superintendent of a tenement building in my neighborhood. And basically, what I do is like black music, filtered through an Italian neighborhood, comes out with an attitude. Yo. So Willie Green would be playing me all this John Lee Hooker stuff and, you know, Sonny Boy Williamson. He'd be playing like, going down the road, stop it, Fannie Mae. Tell my baby what I heard her boyfriend say. Don't stop me talking. Why, Lord, tell everything I know. I'm gonna break up the signifying. Why, Lord, Jack, and some people got to go. Jack gave his wife $5, go downtown, get some, you know, he'd do stuff like that, or, yeah, and I woke up this morning, round for my shoes. Yeah. Some telling me, child, got to do the walking blue. Yeah, woke up this morning, looking right for my shoes, child. You know that I learned this morning, child, now the days of walking blue. Some people tell me that their worry blues ain't bad. That we're so feeling I'm on ever care, son. People tell me that they worry blue, they ain't bad, child, no. Oh, but they don't worry so feeling I'm on ever care, Jack, no, no, no. And I'm a walking blues, got their walk. You know, he'd do stuff like that. So I'd go into the studio and do the white version of that.
No, really, but it sounds like what I'm hearing from you is that you heard country music through Hank Williams. You heard all these blues recordings.
Right.
And what you found was this kind of
and
Bronx
add
version.
And a little doo-wop.
Yeah, that doo-wop was that for you. This really, like for you, native version of all the music that you were loving.
Right, it kind of.
But it was authentic because it was your music. You weren't just doing stuff in the manner of somebody else.
Well, Willie Green, again, the guy who was doing this, he told me, he said, Dion, he said, write about the people in the neighborhood. Write about the things you know. And to me, when I looked around my neighborhood, we had characters like Frankie Yunk Yunk, Joe Beebe Eyes, Ralphie Moach. There was a guy in my neighborhood, they called him Shakespeare. He used to say, like, to be or not to be, which is my apartment? I thought I'd get you with that, Terry. But we had a lot of characters, you know, so, and they seemed bigger than life. Like the Wanderer, his name was Jackie Burns. He was a sailor who got tattoos all over him, you know. And every time he'd date a girl, he'd get a name tattooed on his body, you know. This guy was like, you know, Flo on my left arm, Mary on my right, Janie is a girl I'll be with tonight. Little girl asked me which one I love the best. I tear open my shirt, I show a Rosie on my chest. I'm a wanderer, yeah, I'm the wanderer. I roam around, 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 around. Play that thing every year and But this guy would walk around with his tank top on with all these names all over, you know.
What did you think of him? Did you like him, or?
He was kind of a loner. He was like, I didn't know him that well. But he just seemed bigger than life because he was older than me and he was in the Navy.
Right.
And he would come back and he'd have this kind of, you know, and I kind of featured myself, you know, kind of like a street corner poet, you know, burnt to the bone with the fire of this new rock and roll music. So I was like, you know, over there saying, what could this guy, you know, like, how could we put this guy to music, you know? And I don't think he ever knew the song was about him. He took off for, see, I don't know if, even know if he's alive today, but The Wanderer is a sad song. It says, I roam from town to town. I go through life without a care. I'm as happy as a clown with my two fists of iron, but I'm going nowhere. It's about a guy who just is stuck in a very kind of shallow lifestyle, you know?
Well, The Wanderer is like one of the coolest songs of the period, and you were so cool when you sang it, and people who wanted to be cool tried to imitate you. Singing, how did you feel on stage doing a song like The Wanderer? Did you feel that kind of swagger that the song had?
Well, it's kind of like taking people on a 3-minute trip. So you get into it, you know, you get into the attitude of it. You know, I'll tell you, Terry, that's why I got involved in music. From the first day I heard Hank Williams, it seemed to me, what he did for me was he took me on like a 3.5-minute trip into a whole world that kind of maybe persuaded me to think of things that I never thought of before.
Before you started listening to rhythm and blues and blues music and stuff like that, I know when you were 11, you used to sing in a bar in your neighborhood, and it sounded like you were a real local attraction. What did you sing when you were 11?
Ah, yeah. I would do, I knew 70 Hank Williams songs. Would you believe that? I would even sing his Luke the Drifter series. You know, in the world's mighty gallery of pictures hang the scenes that are painted from life. I was like 13 years old. I thought I was a philosopher. I didn't even know what I was singing about. I sang Honky Tonk Blues. I sang Jambalaya. If you, an Italian from the Bronx, I had no idea what jambalaya meant, but it sounded so good and felt so good coming out of my mouth, you know. Goodbye, Joe, me gotta go, me on my own. You know, jambalaya, crawfish pie, and a filet gumbo. I didn't know what gumbo was. I knew what rigatoni was, but gumbo, I had no idea. And, you know, I got caught up in this music. And it I guess it's like anybody else when you get caught up into something. It just took me away.
Why don't we pause here and listen to the first Dion and the Belmonts recording, which is I Wonder Why, with those great harmonies.
That's a good attitude song.
Yeah. Let's hear it. And what year is this, Dion?
This is 57, beginning.
And you were how old?
I was 17.
Okay, let's hear it.
I love you.
before this great recording that we just heard, you made a couple of recordings under the name of Dion and the Timberlanes. And these are two really square-sounding recordings that go against everything that you've been talking about. Why don't I play one of them, in fact? Just a few seconds of it. Just a few seconds of it.
Okay. And that's why I brought the gun. Okay.
This is called Out in Colorado.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It sounds almost like a hoedown. It's a really corny sounding record. Just a few seconds of it. Here it is, Out in Colorado.
Oh, the music fills the mountain air
in Colorado,
'cause I got a sweetheart there
in Colorado.
The sun is smiling in the skies,
you pigeon, my sweetheart's eyes,
singing pretty lullabies
out in Colorado.
Dion, what went through your mind when you were given this material to sing? It's not you at all.
I know. What happened was, I was in the neighborhood, like I told you about Willie Green, teaching me these songs. I'm doing all this kind of Bronx blues soul stuff. And I go down to Lori Records and I sing a song for him. They loved it. They said, let's sign this kid up. They signed me up and they give me these tracks that were already made that Hugo Montenegro, this great arranger, arranged. But they were sitting on the shelf and they needed a vocalist for. So they said, could you sing on this for us? I said, I don't think so. They said, please, you know, we could, come, then we'll get into all the stuff you like. Now, yeah, we'll do that I Wonder Why thing, but sing this. And the Timberlanes were like from Colorado. They were like, do-di-o-do-do-do, and Minnie and Willie will go, you know, and off to the, you know, like kind of a Broadway show kind of thing. And I was like, come on, man. You know, so I did it for them, but after I just, I said, guys, could I go back to my neighborhood? And I kind of recruited the best doo-wop singers I knew from my neighborhood and came back down, and we did I Wonder Why.
The music that you started doing was vocal music, and it was vocal harmonies. And as you said earlier, the vocal harmonies were kind of vocal impressions of instruments, of saxophone solos and stuff. Did any of your friends play instruments?
Well, we didn't have any instruments on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
So there were, you know, we didn't have saxes and basses and places to rehearse. You know, we didn't have those kind of things. So a lot of the arrangements, in fact, I was talking to Bruce Springsteen, and I was telling him that I use, or he uses, synthesizers a lot like I used vocal groups. And I said, I'm going to show you. And so I did the song Book of Dreams. And if you hear, if you listen to Book of Dreams, I was showing him how I used to pad my records with vocals. We didn't have synthesizers back then. So he got a kick out of it. You know, he says, you're right, you're right. I see what you mean. Because, you know, when he did that song, Philadelphia, you could hear it. It's like a modern-day doo-wop song. Well, this is a story, but I'm going to tell it. The CD's called Deja Nu, and the song that you're about to play, in fact, the whole CD, all the songs in it are a movie soundtrack for a movie called The Wanderer that Chaz Palminteri wrote a screenplay for. And I was writing these songs for different scenes in the movie. The movie got bogged down this year, so I just released the CD. But anyway, every song on the CD is written for a certain, you know, piece of the movie. This song was written for a montage scene in the middle of it. I traveled with Buddy Holly and Richie Valens on that tour. We were co-headlining a tour. And we were on this little yellow school bus, not one of these luxury line custom-made coaches today. It was just a yellow school bus. We were riding through the Midwest in 1959, February of 1959. It was cold. It was like 30 below zero. We were freezing. But we really kind of bonded on this tour, Richie, Buddy, and myself, because we had the first Fender guitars that were issued, these new Stratocasters, and we were in a kind of a competition to see who would make them ring the longest. And 2 weeks into the tour, Buddy got kind of fed up with the bus breaking down, and he was trying to recruit people. He chartered a plane, and he said, because the more people he get aboard, the less it would cost. So he said, you know, it'll be $36, he tells me. And he hit the magic number for me. I grew up with my parents screaming and yelling at each other for the rent in Bronx, New York City at the time was $36. So my mind hadn't stretched out to that place where I could spend the whole month's rent on a 45-minute plane flight to Fargo, North Dakota. So I said, no. So he gives me his guitar. He says, here. He says, you know, take care of my guitar. He says, and you better take care of it. You know. So he took his laundry. That's what he wanted to do. He wanted to get a haircut. He wanted to do his laundry. Gives me the guitar to take care of. So now I wonder how his guitar sounds compared to mine. So I go in the dressing room and I take the guitar, I'll plug it in, and I was telling Chaz Palminteri as he's writing this story around this book, The Wanderer, that I wrote. And the movie was called The Wanderer. So he said, you know, we could do a Buddy Holly song here in the movie, like It Doesn't Matter Anymore. I said, let me write something to go through me sitting in the dressing room playing his guitar and singing with it. And while this scene takes place of them leaving, us driving to Fargo, arriving the next morning. So this song was written for that scene because I thought I could capture this thing. Because in my heart, I've always wanted to express this relationship that, you know, that I pondered at times or reflected on at times that I had with Buddy Holly, and it came out in this song.
And I just want to say for our listeners who don't know the end of the story that Buddy Holly took this plane that you decided not to take. The plane crashed, killing Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and the Big Bopper.
Right.
So the other thing is, so Chaz Palminteri's movie is your biography? That's what he's trying
yeah,
to
say? Yeah, he wrote a screenplay around this, around your
biography, autobiography, right, The Wanderer.
Right.
All right.
So well, that's what this whole album is. It's actually a soundtrack. In fact,
it's a soundtrack of your life.
I don't think it would have came out as good if I tried to write songs and put out an album. I kind of did it inadvertently. I kind of backed into it,
right,
you know, and it's interesting the way it came out, you know.
My guest is Dion. Let's hear the song inspired by Buddy Holly, Every Day That I'm With You.
Every day I step down trouble, heaven knows it's what I do. I raise my fist for the struggle every day that I'm with you. Every day I wake up hungry, yeah, and I try to get my fill. Anyway, it's a great big country and I've got time.
Let's get back to our conversation with Dion. When we left off, he was telling the story of narrowly avoiding the plane crash that killed Buddy Holly. How did it change your life to know that you came just like an inch away from dying in that plane crash with him? I mean, that's got to give you pause and make you think that every day is a kind of gift after that.
Well, in some kind, I was 19 years old when that happened, and the rug was ripped out from under me. I was in shock. In fact, when I got home, my girlfriend, who's been my wife all these years, at the time she was my girlfriend, she said, "You were in shock for like 2 weeks. You stayed in a room singing Buddy Holly and Richie Valens songs." But I think, you know, at that age, basically, I was baffled because this was the best thing that ever happened to me, being on tour with these guys, running around the country singing rock and roll. I was like, you know, I felt like, wow, what a good thing this is. You know, what fun, what, you know, seeing the world, new friends, you know, there was nothing like it. And then all of a sudden, I'm wondering, what's this about? Where am I going? Why am I here? Who am I? What, you know, I'm starting to ask questions that I really, they're probably floating around your head, but you don't, you know, they're not clear. But I knew God had a plan for my life right then, but I started thinking on a higher reality, you know, after that. I started seeking, like, truth and freedom and God and, you know, what's this about? You know, why are we here? And that's been a journey for me, and it's been a wonderful journey.
Did you fly much after that?
I flew home. I wanted to get, for some reason, I knew I had to get over it right away, so I flew home. And, but a lot of things weren't worked out, because when I got back to the Bronx, there was no one that said, gee, what are your feelings about, They went, hey, you know, came into our neighborhood the other day, we're going to kick his teeth out. Are you coming with us or not? You know, and that was that. I mean, nobody cared. You know, I was out in the Midwest like alone, you know. So I never really, put a lot of these questions, you know, a lot of these things to rest. I had to go off alone to, like, you know, work them out, you know.
But that's an interesting point that you brought up. I mean, the music that you started performing when you were young was so much a part of your neighborhood, both the people you started performing it with initially and the kind of sound that it was. And then you became really famous, and when you become famous, you might become a hero in your neighborhood, but you're also separated from the people because you're living in a different world. Suddenly you have money, you have fame, you have different kinds of friends, you have professional connections.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. But there's a part of me that never left the... my neighborhood... my upbringing became more important and more valuable to me as I got older. I appreciate the people, like even the priest who told me, like early on in my career when I was walking down the streets thinking I was the rebel king of the neighborhood, he said, "Yo, Dion, come over here, Father Joe." He said, "What's this rebel without a cause?" You know, that James Dean movie was out. He said, "You know, when you stand up for the truth, you really got something, you know." I didn't know what he was talking about, but he was telling, you know. But you see, he was the true rebel. He was the true radical one in the neighborhood. I didn't know that, so I had to, you know, these things you learn as you, you know. I'm glad I'm around this long, because, like, you find these little treasures.
At the same period when, you know, Buddy Holly dies, you start thinking more about the larger meaning of things, the direction you really want to be heading. It was also during the period when you were doing heroin. So I'm wondering if how the heroin connected or didn't connect with this sense of looking for something larger.
Well, yeah, you're trying to find something and trying to fill up that place in you that needs filling, and sometimes you go to the wrong places, you know. But when I look back on some of my records now, it's really funny. I see a kid who, you know, here's Chuck Berry singing about school, singing about cars, even though they were, you know, maybe weren't, you know, it was more than cars. But, you know, singing about all these kind of things. I'm singing like, I live in dreams, strange as it seems, love came to me. When I opened my eyes, I realized love came, you know. I wrote a song called Born to Cry that I say, what was I writing of it? What was I thinking? I mean, they're really heavy. They're not very light songs. They're very introspective songs. And I could see how I was trying to work out some of these things. And the music was a real, outlet for me, like salvation in a way.
Born to Cry isn't one of your more famous songs. Would you do a little bit of it for us?
Well, here's a song. Yeah. I'd like to tell you all about the good and the bad. I wish today the world, my friends, would stop being sad. There's so much evil around us, I feel that I could die. And I know that I was born to cry. If I ever told you all about the things I have done, I don't remember having even one day of fun. The things I like and want to have, I can't even buy. And I know that I was born to cry. See, I blew it.
That's great, though. While we're on the subject of these kind of deep feelings that you're having and trying to translate into songs, let me ask you about something that you also had to do at the same time. Just the other day on TV, I was watching Don't Knock the Twist, one of the rock and roll movies with, you know, Chubby Checker, and it's all about, like, the twist becoming a dance craze. And, of course, you're featured doing The Majestic and The Wanderer in two of the nightclub scenes. And there's one scene where everybody's on stage doing the twist, and you're on stage looking like, what am I doing here?
Well, you know, it was a funny thing. That was a time... Well, that's exactly what I was feeling, because here you have a scene where people are sitting at, like, tables in a nightclub, you know, all dressed up, and they wouldn't let you use any black musicians on stage. The white performers had a white band. Chubby Checker had a black band, because the movie wouldn't get played. You go from south of Baltimore, it wouldn't get played. So, and all I had on my records were black musicians from the Apollo. They played The Wanderer, Runaround Sue, all those records. The guys like Styx Evans and Panama Francis and Buddy Lucas, all these great musicians at that time. But it was you have these really white bread guys on stage going do do do, you know, and you have these people sitting at tables. Meanwhile, the song, like Runaround Sue, doesn't look anything like it is, because it was born on the street corners, in the schoolyards, banging on cardboard boxes, and guys chanting, and with jeans on, and with attitude. It didn't look like it looks like in those movies. So I still, when they have these doo-wop shows, I still get, what are they doing? They look like wedding bands. That wasn't the way it was. When I heard the Cadillacs singing in the... in back of the Apollo Theater, you know, sitting all over a Chevy, you know, and like banging on the street corner light post, you know, or cardboard boxes and beer bottles, you know, the music was street music, and it just looked so funny dressed up like that to me.
There was a period of your life when all of your recordings were coming out on a Christian record label. You had gone through a spiritual awakening, were born again. And I'm wondering if that period when all of your records were on the Christian label, was that because that's the only kind of material you wanted to record, or is that the only place where you were finding a place to record?
No, it's what I wanted to record at the time. But I tell you, gospel music is very uplifting. It's great. It's just a lot of fun to write. And it's wonderful for the heart, soul, mind, and spirit. It's just great. So I was, my faith had come alive. You know, I grew up Catholic, you know. I would say I had a mild Catholic upbringing. But, you see all these beautiful signs and these traditions and all these beautiful ceremonies. But you don't realize that they're a visible sign pointing to a higher reality. And one day, my faith came alive. It just came alive. And I just wanted to, you know, I've always had passion and it always came out musically. It was one of the gifts that God gave me to express it. And music is a wonderful, it's an international communications tool. You could communicate your ideas, your perception of how you perceive things and truth. And so I always, instead of moaning and groaning and being in my concerns, you know, look what these people are, look what, I like to be influential, affect change, at least through music, like a song like Abraham, Martin, and John, just to have people think about things where they could ask themselves the right questions. If you don't ask yourself the right questions, you're going to get stuck. So music is a wonderful tool to stir up some change in people's thinking. So writing some of this material for me was just, like I wrote a song called, remember that story I told you about Father Joe?
Yeah.
He said, when you stand up for truth. Well, I wrote this song. I saw the verse in scripture. It said, the truth will set you free. So I wrote this song. I'll do a verse.
Great.
Down the dirty city streets, with black top sneakers on my feet, I raced through early teenage years and dealt with all those nameless fears, waiting as the school bell rang to drop my books and join the gang. In alley fights and stickball games, where passing girls wore dirty names. Over my shoulder and back through the years, I can see my father's eyes in my memory, telling me Jesus died upon the cross. War was won and nothing lost. And son, the truth will set you free. Yeah, the truth will set you free. You know I turn my collar, I comb my hair. My high school friends are all dead. When two dimes made my pockets ring, I was a wealthy New York king. Being cool by the candy store, I knew my world yet wanted more. My high school colors of black and blue, they would disturb my point of view.
That sounded really great. Do you still perform that? Do you do any of your gospel songs at concerts now?
I just kind of do Dion music. You know, if one year I'll go out, maybe do two gospel songs. Some years I go out, I don't know, I just put shows together.
Well, Dion, this has been a really special session. It's just been wonderful to hear you play music from the past and the present. I want to thank you very, very much. I'd like to close with another track, and the CD is called Deja Nu. Let's close with the opening track, which is called Shoebop. Would you introduce it for us?
Well, can I tell a little story about it?
Yeah.
Shoebop was written right on the street corners of the Bronx. I was with Chaz Palminteri, and I was saying, you know, in this scene in the movie, we could have these guys singing this. And I started writing it right there, you know. I recorded this album with all the same techniques and equipment I recorded The Wanderer with. It sounds like, being it's a soundtrack to a movie, it sounds like it was recorded in the 50s or 1960 and somebody forgot to release it.
Dion, what did you mean before when you were saying that you used all the same equipment and techniques that you did on your early records?
We recorded this album with tube mics and the same equipment that I used on maybe Teenager in Love, The Wanderer, Run Around Sue. It sounds like it was recorded right in between those records. We ran the vocals through the hallway. We used the same... That's what we did in the 50s. We didn't have, you know, we didn't have effects. So we invented stuff, you know. And we did it live. Everything leaks into everybody's mic. You know, back then, if you come into the studio with a band and didn't get it done, it didn't get done. It just had to happen. You had to capture that magic right there. So we went in and let it rip, you know.
Dion recorded in 2000 after the release of his CD, Deja Nu. From that CD, here's Shoebop.
Shoebop, shoo-bop, whoa, shoo-bop, 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 shoo-bop, whoa.
Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our senior producer this week is Roberta Sherrock. Today's program was produced by Ian Chillog. I'm Terry Gross. We'll close with a song from Dion's brand new CD, New Masters. This is a new song that he wrote called Behind Susan's Eyes.
Was this the girl who caught my eye? Three lockers down from mine, who floated through the schoolyard lines and taught the sun to shine? Was I the boy who sang his dreams while thinking just of you? A shadow in the moonlight night on Belmont Avenue. Upon the rooftop high, the moon glows on the radio beneath the diamond sky. Oh, if I knew all the answers, I'd win the Nobel Prize. But I'm content to know they lie behind Susan's eyes. Behind Susan's eyes. And wasn't I the rebel king, turning wild 17, while you saw through my fantasy the neighborhood saw James Dean? Was this the girl who laughed at me but finally wore my ring, who really voiced a soft complaint and anchored everything? Oh, didn't we just run away through autumn fields of gold, where we could stay forever young, we never would grow old, we never